This is a People First Radio podcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Arto Tianaho has been living with and working with problematic anxiety for most of his life. In the process, Arto has learned a great deal about what anxiety is, where it originates, and how to manage and decrease it. But it's an ongoing process, one that doesn't have an easy or tidy solution. Anxiety disorders are mental illnesses. The different types of anxiety disorders include phobias, panic disorder, agoraphobia, social anxiety disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, and other mental illnesses that include anxiety, such as obsessive-compulsive disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder.
Each anxiety disorder has its own specific treatments and goals, but most include some combination of strategies. I spoke with Arto Tianaho, who now works as a certified coach practitioner, about his personal struggles with anxiety and some of the things he has learned from what has become a lifelong process of learning. You talk about living with problematic anxiety. What do you mean by using that description?
I like to use the description because anxiety is essentially, it's rooted in our survival, and anxiety can be useful. But when anxiety becomes something that changes my behavior, changes how I feel, and fills me full of negative thoughts, then that is where the anxiety has gotten to a point where it's no longer useful in my life and is problematic. And anxiety is like stress, where it is on a continuum, so where you are at can change daily, it can change hourly. So that's why I like to use that word.
Was there a diagnosis of some kind, Arto, and was that important in terms of your own understanding?
Absolutely. Well, when I look back, and even when I tell my story, I recognized at a very early age that I had anxiety. I had problematic anxiety. It was as early as first grade when the teacher asked me to correctly pronounce my name in front of the class, and I felt my knees start to shake and my face got beet red, and I recognized that this was not what other kids were responding like, that this was something that was happening to me. I went on to develop a dental phobia and a blood and needle phobia throughout my childhood. I was a worrier, had generalized anxiety, but it wasn't until the age of 25 when I was at work during a stressful time and had my first panic attack. And after that, I had many panic attacks. At times, there would be up to 10 panic attacks in a day, and that led to agoraphobia as well. So I didn't receive a diagnosis until much later in my life, but it was important because I came to understand that this wasn't just something that was happening to me, that there was an actual name for it. And when you see all of the things that happen, then it really makes sense, and you understand that all of the things, the feelings of, am I going crazy, am I going to lose it, all of the rest of it, these are normal things that happen along with that diagnosis. So having a diagnosis was an important part for me, making me realize that I wasn't alone and there was a name for it, and there was actually treatment that would help as well.
Now, agoraphobia is something that isn't well understood, but I don't think that necessarily the terms anxiety attack and panic attack are well understood either. Some people bandy them around as though it's, you know, I had a panic attack yesterday when I couldn't find my keys, for example. I'm wondering if you could maybe speak a little bit to each of those, the notion of an anxiety attack, a panic attack, and the concept of agoraphobia.
Well, a panic attack itself is relatively common, and a person can have a panic attack. There are situations where somebody might be a student and they've been studying for a test, they've been drinking a lot of coffee, and they're on a congested bus and they're feeling sweaty, and all of a sudden they feel this rush of fear go through their body, and their heart is pumping and beating like crazy, and they're feeling really uncomfortable in this sense of fear. But the difference with that is it's how they interpret that. If they recognize that this was something that happened as a result of how they've been living and the stress they've been under, then it may just be a one-off. But for somebody that develops panic disorder, what happens is you become afraid of the panic attack, and the fear of the panic attack is what panic disorder becomes. And then you become hypersensitive to those bodily sensations or those thoughts, and those either or can be enough to trigger that panic attack. In a panic attack, if somebody asked me, well, what is it really like? Well, I would say, well, think about something that scares you the most, whether it's a heights, whether it's being face-to-face with a poisonous snake, whether it's somebody placing a tarantula on your shoulder or anything along those lines, and think of how your body would react at that moment. And when a person has a full 10 out of 10 panic attack, that is that rush of fear that goes through the body. So I could put it into those terms. That's how relevant it is. But agoraphobia is something that can happen to people that have panic disorder, but not necessarily. And a person can have agoraphobia and not necessarily have panic disorder. But agoraphobia is fear of not being able to exit a place or a situation. And for me, when I developed my panic disorder, I would have this fear of not being able to exit a situation or a place. And for me, it was a lineup. So it was a bank lineup, a grocery store lineup, and then it would attach itself to more and more things because the anxiety was very creative as well in finding new places to trigger that fear response. So bridges were a classic example. We've got bridges all over Vancouver, and that fear of what if something happens or if you're trapped on the bridge. So if traffic in the way it is now, snarling over a bridge, that would be a prime place to have an agoraphobic panic attack, a reaction. So it really does lend itself to more and more things. So it could even be elevators. It could be a crowded place. It could be a stadium. It could be a movie theater. It could be a restaurant. And even getting a haircut where you feel that you can't escape, or if you do feel panicky, you'd have a hard time explaining it, and you would feel socially awkward about trying to explain why you had to leave the room. So that's sort of essentially agoraphobia and panic disorder.
What have your experiences of treatment been over the years?
Over the years, I have tried so many different things, and when a person, and I could, you know, for myself, there is a point in life where you will do absolutely anything to try to find some relief, try to find a way to learn to manage the condition. In the beginning, in my 30s, I did try medications. I tried a few. Now, for myself, it's a tricky game with medications because it's about finding a good fit, and with many medications there are side effects, and I didn't enjoy the side effects, so I decided that I would try something different. I did at one point tried hypnotherapy, EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization, rapid eye movement desensitization. And then finally, I found out about cognitive behavioral therapy in a program that was being offered at the Anxiety Disorders Clinic at UBC. And this was at a point, and I was 40 years old, And this was at a point where my agoraphobia was at its worst, and I had a new job that I was applying for. And so I found out about the cognitive behavioral therapy. I did some research on it, and I thought that that would be a really effective thing for myself. And whether I was anxious getting there, coming back, or otherwise, I was going to make it happen because I was really desperate for something.
You've developed a public presentation, and you've been quite open and public about your experiences on YouTube and elsewhere about your journey with anxiety. And your public presentation, you called it The Great Illusion. Why did you use that title, and tell us more about that concept?
The Great Illusion about anxiety and especially my journey with anxiety is because it took a great deal of time and it took a great deal of work to figure things out for myself. And even with anxiety, it really is about learning to manage it, because it is important for our survival. And when we have our anxiety under control, it actually is helpful for motivating us to do things and otherwise. But for me, anxiety had such a hold on me for so many things, and it changed my behavior. I stopped myself from doing a lot of things I would normally have enjoyed, and it was all because of my anxiety, my panic disorder, my agoraphobia. And there's a saying that what you resist persists. So every time I would start to feel that panic rise up, I would resist it by fleeing the situation, and that would give that avoidance of the feelings and the thoughts would be the quickest way for me to get some relief. But the problem is that was only reinforcing that illusion that the panic was going to be so severe and horrible, catastrophic things were going to happen to me. But through cognitive behavioral therapy, through recognizing the thoughts I was having and using a realistic approach to how many times have I had a panic attack? Hundreds. So was that the big one that took me down? Did the most horrible thing happen? Well, a lot of times a panic disorder is a very personal thing, and a lot of people don't even recognize what's going on. It's not like you turn purple all of a sudden or get hives or anything like that. And so for me, the thing with agoraphobia was, and the panic, because it is so much in your body and in your thoughts, that I really did a lot of work for myself as well with changing the relationship between how my body reacts and how my mind would instantly trigger my fear response. And I talk about the part of the brain, the limbic system, the emotional part, and the amygdala, which is the trigger for the adrenaline response and the fear. And it's like a smoke alarm that is just overly sensitive, and it's going, and the smoke alarm is going off when you're making toast. You need to readjust it and calibrate it to a point where it's no longer doing that, but when you need it, it's there. So for me, doing a lot of work with the relaxation part, so changing all of these negative, you know, all of these catastrophic thinking and all of that, I included a lot of meditation. Exercise is across the board. It's good for everybody, every condition, and it's a wonderful thing, but it isn't a standalone. So I've been meditating for a long time now, and I find that it's very helpful and it's accumulative. The results you get, the changes in how you raise your self-awareness, and you become aware of whether a thought is helpful or hurtful. You recognize the thought, and therefore you don't have to buy into it. And it got to a point as well, like doing some diaphragmatic breathing daily, doing some meditation, being mindful as much as I can, just doing things and enjoying that moment as much as possible. But when I would feel the anxiety, I would see it for what it really is. it's, you know, there's an acronym for fear. It's false evidence appearing real. And when I finally had my moment where I called it out in a lineup, just in on my own, I said, okay, I know this feeling. I can feel the anxiety coming up in me. Give me your best shot. Come on, let's see what happens. And when you can change that relationship with fear and actually call it out for what it really is, then for me, that was that moment of freedom. That was that empowering moment of seeing that anxiety as a thin veil, as something that really was an illusion. It was self-generated, but at the same time, I could change that. And that is that moment. But for everybody, the moment to be able to take control of it and all of that requires a person's own personal journey to get there and to discover that for themselves. But as I said, there are many tools, there's many strategies to get you there, but it's a good place to be.
Arto Tienoho, thank you very much for speaking with me on this.
Thank you.
Arto Tienoho is a certified coach practitioner working to help people break through their limitations and achieve extraordinary results in their lives, careers, businesses, and organizations. You can find Arto Tienoho on Facebook and online at beboldlifecoaching.com.
People First Radio is an initiative of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and broadcast on CHLY 101.7, radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the partnering organizations. Listen to People First Radio on demand. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpages.